This is John Martinka, and you are listening to the Getting the Deal Done podcast series. And my special guest today is Eric Possel with ITRA Global. And I've known Eric for about 20 years or so. He is in the Bellevue Rotary Club. I'm in the Bellevue Breakfast Rotary Club. And when I first met Eric, I'd say he was unique. He's the only person I met who did commercial real estate tenant and buyer representation without listing properties for lease or for sale. And it's been a very nice market for him and a much needed service. So Eric, thank you for being here today to share some thoughts on the 2021 commercial real estate market in the greater Puget Sound area.
Thanks, John. I appreciate it.
Okay. Well, let's start because, as you've told me, the market and what's going on with it is the number one question you get. Now, you are not a retail person, so it's industrial and office. So why don't you share on industrial and office, what's going on? And in your office, talk about, you know, from the low end to all the way to the Class A.
Sure. Okay. And they're two very, very different markets. And the overview statement is that office per se is down dramatically. Industrial is actually doing much, much better. And from a point of perspective, in the greater Seattle marketplace, we are coming out of a market. If you go look at the run-up from 2011 to 2019, we had a huge expansion and driven by a lot of technology, by a lot of the FANG, you know, Facebook, Apple, Microsoft, expansion into this market. And this market by other standards like San Francisco is very, very cheap and we have great talent. And so it's just been a real boon to the commercial real estate market to see these companies grow like crazy. And so we were basically in an economy in the office market where there was year over year price increase of roughly 8%. So if you think about that, you know, most people have a lease in place, they put a five-year deal in place, they put an escalator of 3%. And then all the, you know, but the market's going up at 8%, all of a sudden, holy smokes, now we're 30, 40% higher than the rents that they've had. That's the market that we were coming out of. We saw vacancies in the, you know, 4 to 6% range, which is definitely a landlord's market. And, you know, small amount of product and a high concentration of demand in the urban cores where people could synergize and go to restaurants and bars and all that. Well, that's all changed with COVID. You know, there's been the two dynamics. One is the dynamic of the pandemic itself. And then as this is a technology driven market, we've seen companies adapt very, very well with the stay at home kind of model. So, you know, there's the whole question of you know, when does demand pick up again and how soon? The people that I've talked to that are closest to the decision makers for in technology companies are really saying, you know, they're going to stay out of the market. They're going to stay out of their offices until there's literally an all clear because they can do it. You know, a lot of real estate, a lot of companies want to get back together as quickly as they can for building culture, for innovation, for a lot of reasons. But they're not going to, you know, they're not going to come back. Demand is not probably going to come back until there's probably the end of the year. And then at that point, it's going to be at a much slower pace than it was. So what does this all mean for, you know, tenants? That's the demand side. On the supply side, we've had an unprecedented amount of new construction that was being built into the market, something like 7 million square feet, of which about 2 million of it is not spoken for. So that's new vacant space that's coming online. At the same time, as companies are shedding their space, we've seen roughly 6 million square feet of new sublease space come on the market. And then we've also seen second generation space, you know, that people have left also going up. So the upshot of that is we have a huge amount of space that is coming online. If you look at what the... if you look at what the prognosticators will tell you about the market, if you look at the market reports of the C.B. Richard Ellis's and the Jones Lang LaSalle's and the big shops who principally represent owners, they will tell you that we will see a decline of 4 to 8% for the next year and a half to 2 years, and then it's going to normalize. I think that those numbers are way, way, way off, because there's not going to be a snapback recovery here. You know, you're going to see people come in very tepidly, and if you look at where the market is right now, the asking rates of Class A space, and you could do this, go all the way down to Class C space, are off by about 6% of what they were a year ago, but there's no deals getting done. The few deals that are getting done have a huge amount of concessions with it. So I think what a tenant can expect to see is throughout this year, as more tenants start to come back into the market, there will be a wider gap between the value of sublease space and direct space. And what that will do is that will cause direct space to start lowering their rents and their face rates. And it's going to be a year of price discovery. I think that it's going to get much softer as the year goes on. So it's not like it's going to snap back and the market's going to roar. It's going to continue to erode. So that's the office market. Industrial market is a little bit different animal, insofar as from the supply standpoint, because it is a lower return investment. And what we've found over the years is there's been so much pressure with the available land to develop retail and office space. It's made it very, it's really constrained the supply of office space. And more of the development is going out to the, you know, the outer edges of the urban core. So the supply has been down significantly. It doesn't grow as quickly as the office market. And then from the demand side of things, as more and more businesses have relied on the internet, that last mile connectivity of goods and services and warehouse spaces has really gone up. So we've not seen that market soften like we have seen the office market. So I think, you know, there's fewer deals out there, but there's also fewer products. So it's a market that you have to be much more aggressive in how you approach it as a tenant, in order to make sure that you don't end up on the wrong side of a deal and overpay.
Okay. When it comes to offices, compare Bellevue in the East Side versus Seattle and what's going on.
Yeah, so basically for years, Seattle was the center, you know, the urban center. And then probably in 2018-19, what we started seeing was, you know, Amazon made a big shift and started coming over to Bellevue. You know, they planned for 25,000 jobs here in terms of their space acquisition. That was caused by just having a really unfriendly Seattle, you know, political environment that essentially pushed them out of there. So they started that, that before the pandemic. As the pandemic struck and people started working more remotely, what we've seen is people come out of the urban cores, so coming out of places like downtown Seattle and going into Class A office buildings in places like Bellevue. And now we're seeing more of a decentralized office footprint. A good example of that, I mean, is REI. REI, as you know, they built this brand new, beautiful campus in Bellevue to consolidate. They ended up never moving in because, you know, they're in the retail business, and it's a lot cheaper to sell that building to Facebook and then go work in more remote hub and spoke type locations throughout the area. So we're seeing more of that, you know, that decentralization of space, and it's the East Side is definitely a beneficiary, because if you think about it, a tenant who's coming, the spread between a downtown office building and a suburban Class A office building has, you know, been, you know, rough order of magnitude, $10 a square foot. You know, it's cheaper in the suburbs than it is downtown. Well, so, you know, a tenant that's leaving downtown Seattle, they can come in and they can get the best space in the market and pay top dollar and still be way, way less than what they were in the downtown core. But that's not to say that there aren't deals to be had. I mean, it still gets back to how you approach the deal and how you leverage the market. So they're both very soft markets, but the general trend is out of the urban cores and into the suburbs, away from Seattle and towards Bellevue, I would say.
Okay. What about the rest of the East Side? You're going to have wherever Amazon is centered, and you got Microsoft. And how far does that spread with the supply and demand situation? Is it Kirkland? Is it Woodinville? Down to Newcastle?
Yeah, I mean, it's basically the 52405 I-90, convergence. So Bellevue, Kirkland, Redmond is really the epicenter for most of this. But what we're finding is that even in the markets like Bothell, Woodinville, are really quite healthy because you now have a high group of employees in those markets, and it's easier for them to work remotely in a place like a Bothell. There is a difference in price. It could be 6-7% in terms of the difference between those two submarkets, but and it's definitely more competitive in the Bellevue marketplace and than it is as you start reaching up north into the Bothell area.
Okay, you touched a little bit on remote working, and what are the people in the real estate industry see as far as that maintaining itself?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And so, we've been listening to a lot of the design experts that are working at the forefront with companies and technology companies. And so what we're hearing is in almost all cases is that the nature of workplace strategy is changing. So it used to be that what you did in an office is you basically gave a person a desk, they came in, they sat down, and that's where they worked, and then they clocked out and they left. Well, now what's happening is that workers are working, and this has been going on for some time, but it's just been really escalated. They're working from home, and they can work at different hours. And so the function of the office space itself is changing. What you cannot do remotely, or it's incredibly difficult to do, is do things like build a culture. How do you get your employees to become the kinds of, representatives of the business that you're in, and how do you get them to differentiate themselves? That's very difficult to do remotely. So culture building is one of the things that we're going to see more of as a function in the office. The other is innovation. I've found over the years that when walking into an office and bumping into another broker and saying, hey, what do you think about this? Or what do you think about that? Or what, it's just those top of mind kind of discussions that you have, and you have these kind of aha moments, very hard to do when you're in a silo. Innovations and then collaboration. How do we work together? So those three things are really what the office is going to do more and more of. And what design professionals are looking at is how can we accommodate that? It's not a big row of desks, but there's collaboration areas. There's pods that people can get into. And the net effect of all of this from the market standpoint is it means that we're going to have fewer workers in the office at any one given time, but we'll probably be dedicating more space to each of those offices. Prior to the pandemic, technology companies were cramming people in their desks and for anywhere from 140 square feet per person, down to, I don't know, 120 square feet per person. And they could do that. But that number is probably going to go up more like to 200, 250 square feet, but you're going to have the number of people that are occupying the office reduce. My gut feeling tells me is that the typical office user of 2019, everything else being equal in 2021, 22 is probably going to be 80% of their footprint going forward. And I think it's going to be a really healthy thing for real estate decision makers because, it's always been, you need to have that brick and mortar to work. And so that many times really forced business owners into making fairly rushed decisions to be able to accommodate their workforce. And as you know, John, when you, you know, when you rush a decision, a lot of times you're not able to do the analysis. You're not able to do the, you know, the SWOT analysis. You're not able to really put in place the things, you know, that, that are going to help you, you know, long-term. And I think that having that, you know, having that flexibility is going to really give tenants the ability to stand back, to look at their options, to evaluate, and to be able to execute, you know, on better transactions.
Yeah, when you mentioned that, it reminds me of a friend at Moss Adams said 3-4 or so years ago, how they had moved to a layout where even partners didn't have an office. They would come in and plug in to the network. It could be a different place every time they showed up at the office, or even multiple times during the day, they wouldn't be in the same place. And that's exactly what you're talking about. So I got one final question. It relates to the last subject. And then if you have anything else you want to share in closing, feel free. You talked about designers, and it triggered me asking, because my son is in commercial construction, and they look at what architects are doing. Do you have any feel for what architects are working on? Is the volume up, down, et cetera?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think I haven't really pulled that, but I think it's definitely down in terms of the amount of work that they're doing, because you just don't have the volume of tenants in the market that you've had in the past. But I know, I mean, I'm just really amazed at how innovative that field is, and how they're busy looking at how do we refit and reconstitute spaces. So I can't really answer to the volume of work. My sense would be is that they're down significantly, but they're looking at new ways of working to be able to really deploy their talents.
So some tenant improvement design and
yeah,
besides just new construction.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Any final thoughts, Eric?
Well, I guess what I would say is, you know, the final thought is that it is a tenants market, and what tenants really need to do is get out in the market and leverage their options. If you don't, I got a call from a referral from a friend of mine, and you know, his buddy said, hey, I've got to renew my space, and I said, send me a copy of your lease and we'll talk about it. Well, it turns out his lease expires tomorrow. and he's looking at a 70% increase in rent. And I said, what you need to do is get a 1-year extension, and then we can go to work on this. So, you know, and the way that tenants can leverage the market is really three things that you need to keep your eye on. One is the clock, time, you know, get started early, get out and, you know, and give yourself time to execute. The second is competition. You know, make sure that you're not just, you know, looking at one option, but really keep at least two viable deals in the place. I've seen too many brokers, you know, just throw out some RFPs and then very quickly, you know, pivot to the one they want to close. And I think that's principally because most brokers work for landlords, and that's what they're taught to do, and that's what they want to do. And the third is really get a good source of information on the market. You know, information on the market, and get information on what it is that you need as a tenant. Get to know who your negotiating opposite is. I mean, there's some landlords in this market that are cash flow driven, and there are others that are value driven. The value driven guys that are, you know, are going to flip their properties, you know, they're not going to give in on the face rates, that because it's against their business model. They may give you, you know, oodles of upfront concessions, but you know who you're dealing with, what their hot buttons are, what their portfolio looks like. You know, and so really dig in, and you know, I guess it's a little bit of a pitch for my line of work, is the best way to do that is just really get a qualified tenant representative to work with. And when you're looking for a tenant representative, you will find, John, you're gonna, it was funny because I had a client call me and said, hey, I can't believe how many tenant reps are in the business today. And I said, well, who are you gonna call from? And these were all full service listing guys, right? So all of a sudden everybody's a tenant rep. The best thing you can do is look for somebody who is aligned with a company that exclusively represents tenants. Then you know they're not a part-timer. You know that they're not just, you know, filling their, you know, their book of business between landlords and working with you. So, and if you do that, you know, most of the guys in my business, line of business, are going to tell you exactly what I just told you. Get out in the market early, create leverage and competition, and, you know, and know you're negotiating the opposite in the market so that you can leverage the best possible deal. So I think if you do that and you move, you know, cautiously through the next, you know, 12 to 18 months, tenants are going to be able to cut the best deal that we've seen in a decade. But, you know, you got to be smart and practical about how you approach it.
Well, thank you, Eric. Again, this is the Getting the Deal Done podcast series. And my guest today is Eric Pasto with ITRA Global. And you can reach him at EPOSTLE@ITRAGlobal.com or go to his LinkedIn and put in Eric Pasto, Eric with a C. And he posts a lot of good, valuable real estate information there on a regular basis. So thank you, Eric.
All right. Thank you, John.